Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano, and I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to discuss two 0-0 draws, duck eggs, if you will. So stick around, please, please stick around. I know that the games weren't that interesting, but we've got some interesting stuff to talk about, and we'll make it fun, right? We always do, don't we, Jordan, Tom?
I think that's debatable, but we try our best, yeah.
People enjoyed the nonsense at the start of the pod last week, didn't they? More than anything else, seemingly.
Yeah.
Which might be actually a reflection of the season so far, or the season in its current kind of identity as much as anything. And can I bring you a very quick Diet Coke update? Because that got a lot of traction last week.
Oh, it did. It did, yeah. Indeed, yeah.
I've had a rethink about my life since last since last Tuesday, genuinely. And...
Have you actually,
this is a genuine thing. Yeah. Okay. So a few people tweeted us. Traction means a few people tweeted us about it. Hanson Ho was one of them, I know. And somebody else at least tweeted me and said, you know, six is a lot, Tom. And I said, yeah, I said a minimum of six, guys. And I was like, that's quite a lot, actually, isn't it? So I've set myself some new boundaries around Diet Coke. I've not cut it out completely because I'll always want a Diet Coke. So it's pointless. But I have severely cut back to two or three a day. And actually, apart from having a headache for the first few days, I feel a lot better. I feel pretty normal. Like, I'm not craving it or anything like that. So I'm on my first one of the day and it's fucking 10 past one now, which is pretty good going for me. I've not replaced it with any other vices. I haven't taken up cocaine or anything like that, which is also good. So... yeah, I don't know if I'm actually getting any benefit from it, but I don't feel worse. So there you are.
So you actually had some genuine withdrawal symptoms then early on?
Yes. Oh, well, I think so, yes. I had like a headache from the moment I wake up until the moment I went to bed for the first probably 3 or 4 days.
Right.
It's quite bad, really,
so
isn't it?
What did we establish on the caffeine front?
Inconclusive. Hanson was adamant that it's in... it, and I've always lived my life thinking that caffeine is in it, but it does, if you grab a can from the UK, and I appreciate that's obviously hard for you, Jordan, it does say, in fact, I'll tweet it, it does say caffeine flavouring. So, okay.
Interesting. You know, I mean, I'm just trying to establish what the headache comes from, because you'd associate that with a drop in caffeine intake at least, wouldn't you, normally?
But yeah, exactly. That's it, which makes me think.
If it's on the can, then...
that's it.
But no, I think that's a wise decision, Tom. I think that's a wise decision to drop it a little bit.
I think whatever else that is a wise... yeah, exactly. And as we say, it's, you know, what's more than six. So
we want this podcast to go on as long as possible. We don't want it to be a two-man show because
that's it.
the coke-related death that may occur.
Yeah.
So they
making
are.
Savings as well, you know?
I mean, well,
you
know, yes.
Cans of Coke must be expensive.
In what form do you buy it? Do you buy it in cans?
Yeah, I do. So typically I would have bought a pack of 30 from Costco or Asda. Asda has stopped doing it in the kind of last year. So it's been predominantly Costco, but actually Costco had become quite expensive recently. And the most cost efficient way to buy it was a pack of 24 from Asda because it was three boxes of 24 for 24 quid. So 8 quid a go, basically.
So you're buying a couple of those a week?
I would have thought, well, I buy it in bulk. I'm talking like six cases at a time and, you know, just wow. just replace when required.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's no longer.
That's no longer. I still have lots in the garage because I'll ultimately drink it and my wife drinks it too. But
what's she on?
Oh, probably a normal amount, like two or three a day. But
that's I don't think that's a normal amount, though. I think that's
Do you not?
I think two or three is acceptable given that it started.
Yes, maybe not normal. No, that makes it sound like every person on the planet drinks two or three a day. Yeah, acceptable. People wouldn't just sort of bulk at that if you said that number. Whereas it's actually become part of my identity that I drink so much.
It does surprise me a little bit, to be honest. If someone told me they drink two or three a day, I'd still raise an eyebrow at that. That still seems. Am I wrong?
Probably not, but let's not interrogate.
It's not a criticism.
No,
by the way.
I know.
To be fair, I sometimes have two.
You have two or three a day.
Not every day, but I would never exceed three. I don't think. If I never really exceed two, I don't think. But it has been known. Yeah.
All right. Well, when I see you in a couple of weeks, Tom, I'll make sure if you can go that long, we'll give you some sort of.
Yeah, that's it. I'll have to get the train to the ground so that I can drink beer so that I don't drink Diet Coke. Does that make sense?
you have to enable your alcoholism to replace the Coke. Yeah, this is a backward line of sobriety, but we'll take it. Yeah. Okay.
So there you go.
Good.
Last question on the Coke thing, though. When you're at the ground, do you get a Coke for at the ground? How do you...
Well... Yes, typically I would, and typically it would probably take a couple. It would take a bottle a half to get me through it. But I went to Wealdstone on Tuesday night, and I didn't buy a drink at all, which is just unlike previously. I would, this is very minutiae, but it kind of gives you an idea of how insane I am. Diet Coke at Wealdstone, typically you can't get it. They're usually more of a Pepsi ground. So I would stop en route somewhere and buy Diet Coke to take in so that I could have Diet Coke. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That noise, exactly. So I didn't do that. I didn't buy a drink whilst I was there and I lived. So I do drink a lot, as I said previously. Like I've got a pint glass on my desk that had squash in it until recently. The dregs of this Diet Coke and a 1 litre bottle of water. Like I do drink a lot, but I survived.
Well, nice. A quick non-league update, Tom?
Yeah, Wealdstone are banging trouble. They play Dorking tonight. This will probably be out after the game. They're likely to go down. They've got former Tottenham youngster and Guyana international Sam Cox in charge after they sacked former Watford loanee David Noble. Remember him from the early 2000s? Mm. Bournemouth may also go down. Hemel and St Albans are just sort of plodding to the finish.
Yeah. And Barnet are possibly going up?
Yes, Barnet are possibly going up. They can pretty much secure second this weekend if all results go their way, which will mean a home playoff semi-final, which will mean they are 90 minutes from Wembley.
Nice. Now let's talk about the depressing season that Watford's had. Although, I mean, in recent times, it's actually been quite fun. Although we are about to talk about 2-0-0s, which fun and 2-0-0s don't really go hand in hand, do they? Different 0-0s as well. Very different 0-0s. Jordan, the second 0-0 better than the first, really.
Yeah, I think it was more impressive in ways. Yeah, no, I think obviously you're playing against a team that definitely posed a lot of problems for us, and you know at home as well, they're pretty pretty hard to play against. And yeah, we did a good job. There was positive, especially defensively. You know, 0-0, obviously a clean sheet at Portman Road is not easy. I think we're only the second, was it maybe the second team? Was it the first team to do it? Maybe Leeds were able to as well.
Second, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so, you know, it was good. There's still things they had to improve on, obviously, but there are definitely positives from that second result, especially.
Mm. Yeah. The first result was, of course, the 0-0 at home against Preston North End. Probably, Tom, the first game we've seen under Tom Cleverley that didn't reach the same heights that some of the other games had reached. I think people were hopeful of you know, or at least a goal. yeah. But there was, yeah, it was maybe it was a one step back type scenario. What do you think?
Yeah, perhaps. And probably when you consider that we obviously went up to Preston and put five past them earlier in the year when we were in our kind of hot streak or lukewarm streak. I think they came for a point, didn't they? Their manager made kind of comments afterwards about, you know, Watford are in great form and so on. You know, the kind of comments we heard last season about having such a good squad and tough place to come and all that. You think, well, we haven't won at home since November, mate. You know, and we're still a pretty fragile collection of players at the moment. But yeah, they and the way they celebrated at the end certainly sort of indicated that they were pretty happy with it. So I think in the circumstances, if the opponents, and they're, you know, they're obviously a decent team, they're just outside the playoffs, they probably won't make the playoffs, but they're obviously a decent team. If they're going to come and make life that hard for you, then I guess you probably have to be not unhappy with the point. It was just obviously an instantly forgettable game. But I tweeted this after the game last night, I think it's still applicable, is, you know, the first thing that Tom Cleverley had to do was stop us leaking goals. You know, it wasn't like we were getting battered every week, but we aren't prolific enough that we can be porous at the back. And he's tightened that up and given us a bit more of a foundation. I'm sure we'll get into that in relation to the Ipswich game, but he's given us much more of a foundation to build from. It's obviously a shame that there's only kind of four games to go now to sort out the front end of the team, and he probably won't get the chance to do that in that time. And who knows if he'll get the chance to do that next season or in pre-season. But, you know, at the very least, he has made us harder to beat. And I think that's a success and a positive kind of slant to take on his reign so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan, after speaking afterwards, Tom Cleverley said there was lack of a killer instinct. And probably he meant that from both his side and the Preston North End side. Just a bit dour, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, I think we talked about it in the previous podcast, didn't we? But I think the added time for a team to prepare a little bit for us, you know that we'd be playing a back three and have a better kind of idea of what to expect, gave them somewhat of an edge. You know, we looked a little bit more ponderous in possession in terms of getting the ball forward. We didn't quite have the same freedom. We didn't quite have that sharpness we saw in the previous two before that. And, you know, it's tough to break them down. And we just didn't really create enough, obviously. And you know, I think cutting edge is fair. You know, we weren't clinical when we did get chances. That's definitely an issue we faced. You know, you can tell that that's been a problem for us for large parts of the season. We can talk about personnel and so on, which obviously does play a big part, but we just weren't really consistently creating enough chances to get any sort of flow or rhythm in attacking positions. And it kind of carried on into the next game too. So it's tough. It's definitely something we've got to try and improve on. But as Tom said too, you're kind of getting towards the end of the season. You've got a small sample of games to work in. This is the time to try things. And I'm curious to see what we do to potentially adapt and find ways to get some shots away.
Mm. Emmanuel Dennis was quite absent in that game, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think the injuries are catching up to him a little bit. You know, he didn't look good physically. And I think obviously we kind of saw him left out the next game against Ipswich as well. So tough, but he's also one of those players that you just never really know, do you, what you're going to get in the day. So he's a difficult one to include and guarantee any sort of output. But when he does do it, obviously it can be a game changer.
Looking at positives though, Tom, the midfield looks, you know, really quite strong, doesn't it? You know, the likes of Georgie really playing well at the minute. Tom Delibashiru seems to have stepped up a gear, and Edo Kayembe as well, who has his hot and cold moments, but it just, I don't know, he looks like a really good player on the ball and finds the right pass more often than not. And I think midfield, of all the areas on the pitch at the minute, is probably the area that's looking the best, I'd say.
It's funny, isn't it? I do agree with you. And the reason I say it's funny is that at the start of the season, I think midfield is the area we're probably all most we're concerned about a lot of areas, but I think midfield we were particularly concerned about. Kayembe obviously hadn't come to the fore. We'd never really seen a season from Tom Delibashiru where he could contribute consistently over the duration. We didn't know what we had in Chakvetadze. Asprilla was kind of, you know, fairly young, fairly new still to proceedings. And one way or another, they've all kind of come on this season. I include Asprilla in that collection because he's kind of playing more centrally in the last couple of weeks under Tom since the switch of formation. But Chakvetadze, again, more so in the first half than the second half against Ipswich and certainly against Preston, you know, he has been, when he came on, he has been the one, I think, hasn't he, that's really kind of nailed down his position. And if he's not the top of the list, the top of the team sheet on, you know, when Tom's scribbling it down on the back of a fag packet, then I suspect he's very near the top of it now because he's been genuinely excellent. And I've said it before and I'll say it again at the risk of repeating myself, which I do often enough, getting him signed up in January looks increasingly smart because I think he will A, be a key player for us next season and B, be someone that if he continues to play as well as he has, then, you know, we could potentially be getting rid of again fairly quickly to bring some cash in because he's, you know, he's a decent age, isn't he? Is he, as I hastily Google, only 24, 25 in August. So, you know, he's a good age. And we've talked about it before, but his ability to drive with the ball, get out of tight spaces, use the ball creatively, intelligently. He's, yeah, he's kind of one of a kind, I think, almost in this team. And also just quickly on Tom Delibashiru. He's been really good. I think he's been probably one of the biggest beneficiaries of the Tom Cleverley of Tom Cleverley's tenure, hasn't he? He was really good again last night. Just looks more mature and sort of grown in stature, I think, more than we've kind of ever seen him. You know, kind of easy to forget how long he's been here now and what have you. And he's obviously someone who's been through a lot of managers and a lot of turnover, but, you know, really good use of the ball and defensively as well. I think his kind of knack of being in the sort of right place at the right time is underrated. He 5 interceptions last night, which was among the most and certainly the most through midfielder. So yeah, couple of really good performances from those guys over the whole Tom Cleverley piece.
Yeah, so it was no surprise that Georgie came in for Emmanuel Dennis, who didn't look his best against Preston, and obviously we know he's struggling with that injury. The other change was Matty Pollock coming in for Francisco Serrauta, Jordan.
Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, that was it's an interesting one. I think we talked about that before too. But, you know, did Pollock really deserve to lose his spot when Serrauta came in previously? And I think he proved last night that he didn't really deserve. I think he was, you know, that whole back line was solid, really good, probably the best performance we've seen of them as a unit. And yeah, Matty Pollock was arguably the best of the bunch. I think he won man of the match, didn't he? The official man of the match.
He did.
But he was really, really solid. And, you know, I think it obviously helps the style of football we're playing right now. You know, we are really looking at containing and playing that back line in a certain way that suits him. We're not asking a ton of him, but he's still looking solid despite being in that kind of more outside position. He's defending in space pretty well, but he's just doing everything simple. And I know that's a cliche, a kind of comment often used to talk about a centre-back like Pollock, but we've lacked something like that since probably we had Craig Cathcart that was consistently playing that kind of cooler head that's able just to do those simple things. And at a time, the time we find ourselves now with the team, the way we've been playing, it is definitely much needed. So good to see. And he's improving. He's playing at a level definitely suitable for this standard.
Was that a slight change to the shape, Jordan, the Matty coming in for Francisco?
Yeah, I think so. Serrauta was playing in the central position in the previous game, I believe, wasn't he? And then Pollock played on the right-hand side. So, you know, it's a little bit different, yeah. But, you know, there can be some rotation there. You know, at times it's going to be, doesn't have to be too static. If Portis has to come across and cover, then Pollock can get in centrally as well if he's, you know, tracking back and so on. So yeah, no, he did a good job, and I wouldn't necessarily have had him down as an outside centre back on the right. But I think if you're going to try and get these three into the back line, it does make sense. So, yeah, no, it was good to see, and also interesting too. You know, we saw Wes Hoot was playing centrally in the back three quite a lot as well. Porteous was actually playing the left centre back position, which, you know, you'd expect with Hoots' left foot, and in a lot of ways you kind of play him on that left hand side. But it did actually, you know, from a mobility standpoint, I think Porteous does give you a little bit more security defensively if you play him on that outside position. But yeah, it was interesting.
What did you make of the defence against Ipswich, Tom?
Probably the standout kind of unit, I suppose, as a team, right? I thought they were excellent. The standout of, I said standout a lot in this podcast already. I suppose you can't be standout if everything's standout, but Matty Pollock was excellent, and I thought Wes Hoot as well, going into the kind of middle of the three, looked really, really good, and probably his kind of best position given his mobility and kind of organisational skills and kind of leadership and those sort of things. Having him in the middle there, I think, does make a difference. But Pollock particularly was absolutely outstanding yesterday. 10 out of 12 defensive actions were successful, 7 interceptions, won almost half of, or just, yeah, almost half his aerial duels, most of his defensive duels, only gave away one foul. He, you know, for someone that has not got a lot of football in him, refuses to be kind of bullied or anything, or intimidated maybe rather than bullied by the opposition and the tasks that he come up against. You know, Nathan Broadhead, you know, tricky little player. We saw Amari Hutchinson at Vicarage Road, what a good player he was. He was the outstanding player on the night when they came to our place. But I thought we, you know, as a unit, kept him fairly quiet actually last night as well. But these kind of tricksy little players that they've got behind, you know, the big boy and Kiefer Moore, dealt with him really well. So yeah, that back three deserve a lot of credit. Back-to-back clean sheets is the, you know, the positive way of looking at 2-0 nils. And under Ismail, we got 9 clean sheets all season. We've already got 3 in 5 games under Tom Cleverley, which I don't think is a coincidence.
No. I think it was very clear that the guys were working hard at the back, but there wasn't a lot going forward, really. I don't remember too many opportunities apart from the phenomenal defensive clearance come shot from Ede Kiambe that almost went in. That was so close, wasn't it? But I think it tells how the lads were feeling when they had that chance to go for the corner right at the end, but they decided to keep it short and take the point. That they were considering that a good earned point rather than wanting to go for all three.
Yeah, and even on commentary, Dan Gosling was annoyed even after full time, wasn't he? He was saying, oh, just stick it in the box. And I couldn't agree more. I understand the theory is, you know, it's kind of chaos. You might lose and they might break on you. And they've got quite a bit of pace, haven't they? Caden Jackson, Amari Hutchinson, etc. But yeah, it did feel like, you know, at that point, we were quite happy to kind of play for the point. But to be honest with you, in the second half, so in the first half, we didn't force Vaclav Hladaki, I'm sure I've butchered that, but the Ipswich keeper, into a save. But in the second half, I'm not saying we peppered the goal, but I think we had more chances than they did. The Spreer one, that kind of wicked left footer was something, nearly kind of went in. Jamal Lewis, of all people, had a shot. And then obviously Ede Kiambe nearly scored with a sort of tackle from his own half. I thought we offered more threat. Whatever he kind of changed at half-time, and I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Jordan, but I kind of felt like second half, there was much more intent and much more impetus to attack than there had been in the first half, even if it was just that he'd given them a kick up the arse. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I think it was more than just a kick up the arse. I think there was just a level of control and confidence we had in possession. You know, there was a shift in mindset that, okay, we're going to hold the ball a little bit. We're not just going to have to relinquish that area of the pitch and decide to drop off and, you know, allow Ipswich to have larger areas of control. We were more intent on getting the ball and moving it around somewhat. You know, we weren't perfect on the night, I think, in possession. You know, we talked about Tom Delibashiri being one of those players that's really done well under Tom Cleverley. I think he was a little bit loose on the ball at times. You know, a few relatively simple passes coming astray. The timing was a little bit off on occasion too from that midfield. But we did look like we actually started to grow into the game. And that seemed to be the point where, you know, we might be able to potentially nick something. You know, if we can continue that possession and occupying space in forward areas, you know, maybe we can get something going. But it's a tough opposition to play against. There's always that threat. And we started to see that a little bit more. And I think once that once that spell started to dwindle, then we just kind of reverted back to containing, and clearly we felt that a point was a decent result, and it is a decent result to get this season at Portman Road. So that was our moment, I think, to really capitalize, and we just didn't quite take it. And that when we hear Tom Cleverley talk about, you know, being clinical or having the cutting edge, I think it's in those moments we have to be able to see that little extra step up in tempo and in performance and attack to truly be a team that can go to these sorts of grounds and get results if with any sort of consistency.
We praised the defense in this game, and quite rightly so, but I don't know if you'd class them defense or midfield, actually, to be fair. But the wing backs, I felt, weren't at the top of their game against Ipswich. In fact, I think they probably had one of the worst games of the season for themselves. It's really weird, isn't it? They've had very up and down seasons. There's been moments when we've been saying how bad they've been, and moments when we've been praising each of them. But today was more of the former.
Yeah, Jamal Lewis has obviously been a popular kind of punch bag this season, but I think at times rightly so. And yesterday was just another game which is, it just always feels so safe, everything he does, and lacking conviction, everything he does. And there was a moment in the first half where he got in the box and someone whipped across him from the right and he was, well, clearly offside. But even in that moment, his instinct was to try and roll it backwards behind him, even though he had no one in front of him except the goalkeeper, to Bayo. It was quite a nice layoff for Bayo, but it was obviously irrelevant because he was offside. But he thought, fucking hell, even in that situation, he doesn't go forward with the ball. Very, very, very frustrating performance from him. And to be honest with you, I think had Ken Semmer been fit, I wonder if we might not have seen much more of Lewis this season once we'd gone to the wing-backs, because I think Ken Semmer's got enough of a kind of grounding going forward and going backwards, or, you know, defensively, that he would have slotted in there quite nicely. On the other side, Andrews, yeah, struggled a little bit, didn't he? I think Broadhead kind of was one of their bigger threats for at least a period in the first half. A lot seemed to be kind of going through him. I think, is there an element of just, you know, end of his first full season, a little bit tired and what have you, ready for a break? I think, again, Ngakia's fitness has meant that we've had to depend on Andrews this season, apart from when Tom Didibashiri has played there. So overall, I would look at his season as a positive. But yeah, last couple of weeks particularly, I think, and that's what leads me to think it's quite possibly a bit of a tiredness, a bit of a fatigue physically, mentally. He does seem to have struggled.
Yeah, I think the wing-backs have been a problem, I think, largely since Cleverley's taken over and we switched that back three. I think we don't have outstanding wing-backs right now. I think Andrews has the potential to improve that, of course, but I don't think he's overly comfortable or overly effective at the wing-back position right now. I think defensively he offers you something because of his mobility, for sure, but I think having that offensive responsibility kind of somewhat on his own on that right-hand side, he looks a little bit overwhelmed. You know, he's not particularly capable at this moment of taking that position and actually kind of, you know, supporting consistently offensively. I think it's a little bit of a big ask for him right now. And, you know, he's not got a ton of help. But when you look at that shape, the way we're playing, our offensive threat is really coming from the likes of KMB and Shaq Batads, and it is those supporting wingbacks. And this is, you know, everyone that's watched a back three or back five play, you know that those wingbacks have to be able to play two ways and have to be able to offer you something. And when both sides are limited offensively, it does affect how you play. And I think that is a big part of why we've been quite blunt offensively, has been the lack of real threat that those wide positions are giving us. You know, I think, as I said, Ryan Andrews offers more, even just from a mobility standpoint. He can get forwards. He can at least pose a threat from a positional sense, but delivery is not great. When to cross and what type of ball to get in the box hasn't been great. He's not really taking on his man too much to try and be that real offensively minded wing back, which we're not necessarily asking him to do, but just looking for ways that he could give us more. And then on the left, obviously, I think Lewis is just quite one dimensional. I think both players are more effective when they have someone to play off in that wing position and ahead of them. You know, Andrews kind of offers you more when he's overlapping and driving into space that's been vacated by that right winger, for example, who's able to come inside and allow that space to open up, rather than being the one to find to find a way past his man and so on. So it's been tough. And I think, as Tom said there, you know, if Ken Semmer was in the team, maybe it was a little bit different. But I think with both of them together, struggling in different but similar ways, it has kind of negated any real offensive threat from the wings.
What do we need to do to improve our ability in breaking teams down? If it can't come from the wing play, then where do we look?
Well, that's a big one. But if you're not going to have that support there, you know, that's a real loss for a team that's playing a back three. But then you've got to be more flexible in your forward positions, and I think that's something we don't have a great deal of. You know, Dennis gives you something, but as we've talked about, we don't know exactly what you're going to get from him, especially when there's injuries as well. Bio, I thought Bio was relatively poor last night in terms of, he wasn't really offering any threat. You know, he's getting involved, but
he was playing quite a different position, wasn't he, Bio? He was coming back a lot.
Yeah, well, we were being quite defensive, so he was deep at times for sure, and he was helping out a lot. You know, at times we were playing almost without a striker, it seems. So yes, he does do that for you, but you know, we didn't have a ton of movement, a ton of options in those forward positions, and it makes it hard. You know, you need creativity there. I think Shaq Fatadze, you're looking at your Edekembe midfield as well to try and give you some spark and get shots away with that left foot. And it's a little bit hopeful at times right now. You know, we're clearly leaning on the defensive aspect of our games to get points, and that's not, you know, that's viable it, for what the objective is. That's for right now, for the objective this season. That's absolutely fine. And I think I'm sure we're going to be looking to be more offensive at times. But if you're Tom Cleverley, you're okay with that balance, to balance the way things are right now, because we haven't lost in our last five. And that's better than where we were. And we're in a relatively comfortable position right now. So, you know, we have to kind of hope at this point, I'd say, that we get something out of the likes of Shaq Fatadze, Emmanuel Dennis when he plays, if you get Rajovic on, potentially he, you know, is able to capitalize off something and just try to take some of the chances we get, because I don't think we're going to be a team that creates a lot of chances between now and the end of the season. We just have to be a one that can hopefully capitalize on a few that come our way.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What do you think on this formation for next season?
A lot depends on who the manager is, who stays and who goes. You know, we fully expect players to move on, then it's interesting, isn't it? The kind of end of season that Andrews has had, maybe he doesn't move on. The end of season that Kone's had, maybe he doesn't move on. Asprey is still the one, isn't he? And you'd say if he was here, then him and he and Kone and Chakvetad, they are players that you build around. So it's kind of hard to say. Even, you know, the centre-back situation, we've only got four centre-backs. You know, we've kind of gotten away with it all season at centre-back, really, haven't we? The fact that Hoot only finally got suspended kind of towards the end of the season has been a bit of a let-off. You know, we're thin in so many areas. I think, in a sense, it's no bad thing because whoever does get the job will have kind of the freedom you hope and the autonomy you certainly hope to mould the squad in their image, even if it's, you know, we know that it's not going to be them bringing in the players they explicitly want. Hopefully, at least saying this is the kind of the shape and the attributes that I want to build around, if nothing else. So I almost think it's, you know, a moot point in a sense, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think it just depends on what I mean, this is tough. This is probably the hardest season, I think. We touched on it earlier in regards to Tom Cleverley being in charge, but I think this is the hardest season we've had in terms of predicting what's going to happen next year or next season. This off season will be a real strange one because we don't really have too much to go on. So even things like, you know, talking about formation and shape, there's so many things up in the air, so many plates spinning. It's almost impossible to really have any sort of prediction right now, which is a tough place for us as people that talk about the team, you know, quite a lot. But from a prediction standpoint, it's really, really difficult to see.
I saw something from Lou Horns the other day saying that he believes he's the next Kieran McKenna. Is that an exaggeration, or do we really think that Tom Cleverley has shown some great initial signs that he could be a good coach?
I need to see quite a lot more, I'd say, to be too confident on that. I think we've seen some good early signs, definitely. I think it's depends on the context too, though. You know, when you enter a team in the manner that he did and you kind of take over at that time, the expectations are set slightly differently, the tasks are slightly different. But you can't argue that he's come up against some good coaches, some good teams, and he's stopped us losing games, which is obviously important. You know, I think it's only us and Middlesbrough that are unbeaten in the last five, and that kind of speaks to the nature of the league. Obviously, we all know how it is in this division, and to come in and do that straight away is really positive. However, I do think there's still lots to be seen. You know, I think we haven't had enough time in some sense to see what he wants to do, what he can do with this squad. And also, we're probably not going to get that much time to see. As we've said earlier on, it's, you know, almost the end of the season. I've only got a couple of games left. How much can he do in that time? I think to really make an assessment of where he is as a coach, we'd have to have him, you know, sticking around a little bit longer and see kind of how it looks after a pre-season, and as we get into games where there's more impetus to win. You know, right now we can look at draws as being a good enough result, and I think that's, it allows you to play in a certain way, and it allows you to kind of value certain aspects of your team that you maybe can't put too much impetus on in a more balanced, broader season. But, you know, as I said, we're seeing some positives, but I think we have to refrain from getting too carried away with him just yet, in my opinion.
Fair enough. The reasoned words from Jordan Wymer.
Is that fair, or is that a downer? Is that a downer on the feeling around Cleverley? Because I think people are generally pretty positive, right? That seems to be the consensus.
Yes, but you're right. We shouldn't get carried away, Jordan. It is only five games. But I think we're all obviously, Tom, because he has that previous Watford link, everyone is treating it in a similar way to how you treat, you know, one of your own who's just made it onto the pitch and is starting to play. And you kind of, maybe you're not looking at the mistakes and you're only looking at the great things they're doing through rose tinted spectacles. And perhaps we're doing the same thing to Cleverley, although it's hard to see what mistakes he's made yet, but,
yeah, it's not so
perhaps
much.
Not aggressive enough against Preston, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think it's a fair sample to judge him too harshly or too positively either way. You know, I think it's such a unique situation to enter a team. I think it's always has to be viewed within the context of the situation, and I think you get to learn. You obviously get to learn a lot more if he was in, you know, a more set position that, you had more resources at his disposal, potentially he had more time. And when I say resources, I don't just mean player wise. I mean, even if you look at time as a resource and, you know, pre-season and so on, then we could maybe get a better picture. But he's not done badly. Obviously he's not done badly. I don't think it's been excellent, but it's been better than the situation we found ourselves in. But of course that situation led to a sacking of a coach. You expect the standards to be low at that point. So I'm curious to see where it goes, definitely. But it's I'm trying to stay grounded and trying to be pragmatic or, you know, realistic about where we're at.
What do you think Mr. Pozzo needs to see before he decides if Tom is the man for next season?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I don't know if there's anything that he can see. There's cynically part of me that thinks he would, you know, he's never really shown an inclination to appoint an up-and-coming manager. The only one we've seen, obviously, was Rob Edwards, and even he had a season as a first-team level coach behind him. I find it far more believable that we'll get somebody kind of experienced relatively in that we've probably never heard of. Certainly I'll have never heard of. I don't know if it's even on his radar at the moment. And I almost think that, you know, this is just getting into kind of guesswork and what have you, but I almost wonder if part of him would spite Watford fans by not appointing Tom Cleverley, because he's clearly got some level of support behind him at this stage.
Interesting. So currently, what sort of percentage are you that Tom is not going to be the man next season? Whereabouts are you?
Ooh, I reckon probably about 80% chance that it goes
really?
To someone else,
that
if
high?
Not more.
Okay.
I would like to see it. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I would like to see him get the job. I think it would be a smart appointment in the sense of, if I were Pozzo, if I were in his shoes, I think it would buy you some time. I think it would, you know, he would be a bit of a human shield in a sense, because he is popular and people kind of, patience would wear thin a little bit less, a little bit more slowly. But yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't fit with everything we know about him, does it? And the kind of managers that we appoint. That's my reservation.
Yeah, I do feel like it's relatively unlikely in some ways to me now. I mean, I think that the real difficulty in kind of looking forward and trying to anticipate any of these things is that we really just don't know. We don't know what the owner's intention is. You know, there's lots of debate as to whether he's looking to get out, whether he's looking for investment, what the strategy is going to be. So it's so hard to kind of predict. Is he going to want someone that's just able to keep us reasonably steady? Does he want someone is he going to be ambitious and look for taking risks to try and get us promoted? Is he going to be safe? You know, we just don't really know. And I think Tom Cleverley kind of fits in a little bit of no man's land in that sense. I think if you were to say anything, his reason for Tom Cleverley is he would get maybe he'd get some fans on side potentially. Maybe that would ease things a little bit for him if he feels any sort of pressure. But who knows if he even does? It's very tough to predict when things off the field are so unstable. And so unclear, it's hard to kind of really get into the mind of the owner and those making the decisions to say who's going to be that guy that's appointed and trying to take us forward. I'm really not sure.
Okay, cool. We move on to Southampton then. The games just carry on getting harder and harder. Southampton, because they're in a similar situation to us where points don't matter too much for them, maybe this is the one where we can have a better game, do you know what I mean?
Things might be a little bit more open. You know, maybe Southampton are going to have their eyes on the playoffs now, aren't they? It's getting through these games, minimise injuries and be as fresh as you can for playoffs, because they've obviously got that secured. They're in that no man's land. They're not getting automatic. They're not getting out of playoffs now. They want to secure the highest spot possible in a sense, because they want to, you know, seed their opposition appropriately. But the biggest thing for them will be availability. How can we keep players available? And that's, you know, we might see something similar to what we saw against Southampton previously. You know, I think we were really good against Southampton in the cup, weren't we? And there was some rotation. You know, maybe there'll be a little bit of rotation for this one, but they do have that threat. They have got a pretty deep squad in terms of quality. But I think this should be, I'm hoping, my personal hopes for this game, that we continue. You know, we've had a good start under Tom Cleverley. If he is a viable candidate, if he sees himself as someone that's in contention for the job next year, you've got a chance to show something other than what we've seen so far. And I think he's done enough now to give himself that freedom to potentially do so. So I'm hoping we get to see a little bit of that. And if there's ever a time for a coach to have the opportunity, it's exactly this moment where we are starting to play teams that have more of a, they're resigned to a certain fate in the future. And that's kind of where we are too. So there's a chance that we get to see something.
Yeah. The top 12 finish is just about still on for Watford.
The big one.
Reckon they could do it, top 12?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever that's worth, yeah.
I mean, I'm clinging on to trying to make this season worth something.
Do you know what though? Oh, there's the train. In all seriousness, there is something in there, because do you remember the Sean Dyche season? You know, there was a point in that season, I think it was Hull away, and we lost, and they weren't great guns at that point. I thought, he's going to get sacked. We're hovering above the relegation zone at this point. But by the end of the season, we had that little kind of flirtation of blimey. If we, you know, win most our games and the teams above us don't do very well, we could actually get in the playoffs, and it gave us something to kind of fight for. And I'm not for one second saying that we're going to get in the playoffs at this stage, not least because, you know, mathematically we can't. But I think, you know, the higher you feel, it just gives you a little boost going into next season, doesn't it? In the way that these kind of results, okay, performances haven't been thriller minute, all of them, but it just gives you that little bit of something to clutch onto, doesn't it? Hold on to that little bit of optimism for next season. You know, Sunderland are just kind of drifting, aren't they? Obviously, Bristol City had a great result last night against John Eustace's Blackburn. I see he's only won 1 in 13 and struggling there. But, you know, those teams, Cardiff as well, are probably the other one. They've not got anything to play for at this stage, have they? So we should be looking to try and finish as high as possible. And it just gives you that little platform, that little foundation for next season. So I hope the players, and I'm sure they will be, I'm sure Tom Cleverley's not going to let them let up. And chiefly, I suppose, because there's something riding on it for him in that he will want to audition as well as he can. If not for now, then perhaps for the future or externally of Watford.
Yeah. See, there is something in it, Tom. Motivation. Get you through the games and then you can start enjoying your time.
You can play that to them in the dressing room.
That's it, yeah.
Before the Southampton game.
Yeah. Tom will come in and say, right, Watford Buzz, boys, we're going to put on the Watford Buzz for you.
That's it. Now get a Diet Coke down you and get out there.
All right, that'll do us for this one then. Congratulations if you've got through listening to two back-to-back reviews of 0-0 draws. But we did it. Hopefully we'll have something a little bit more entertaining to talk about after the Southampton game. Fingers crossed. In the meantime, though, if you do like the podcast, please do get along to the iTunes page, go down to the bottom, give us a rating out of 5. That'd really be appreciated. Drop a little comment as well if you like what we do. Tell us and we'll read it out on the podcast. You can also join our Patreon. We do have a Patreon. We literally have it there so you can chuck us a few quid if you want to. But, you know, if it's there, if you want to, you can find us Watford Buzz Podcast. Just type in Patreon alongside that and you'll find us there. And then follow us on the socials as well. We don't ask too much, do we? At Messi Messiano, at Jordan Weimer, at TB Bedell, and at Watford Podcast. No, at Watford Pod. Although follow at Watford Podcast as well, because then you'll be following the From the Rookery End boys, and they're great. So definitely give them a follow as well.
You're plugging everyone down.
I know, you? I am. Right, okay then. Thanks very much, guys. We'll see you after the Southampton one. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay. And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.